Good morning, King's Community Church, and friends and family. It's so fun to see all of these faces in the same room this morning. We are continuing to follow the lectionary readings through Advent, and today we are looking at a little gem of a passage in a minor prophet in the book of Zephaniah. So I'm going to give you some time to get there this morning because we don't often read from Zephaniah in my Bible. And also, no shame if you have to go to the table of contents to look it up. Zephaniah, in my Bible, I'm going to tell you, it's on page 942. I don't know. Does that help you? And we're looking at chapter 3. Habakkuk is the book that comes before Zephaniah, and Haggai, because this helps you out so much, is the book that comes after it. Zephaniah chapter 3 this morning. Oh, and it helps to turn my sermon right side up. What moves you? What gets you moving? There are a couple of ways that we can understand this question. What moves you? We can understand it in the terms of what gets you going, what physically moves your body, what gets your booty on the dance floor, as the kids are saying these days. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that in church, but you can't fire me. Get ready for the best sermon ever. No, don't worry. Don't be scared. That was as scandalous as it's going to get this morning. What gets you moving? Maybe it's that Saturday morning feeling when you don't have to go to work that whole day or the next day. One of my favorite memories of my dad is his awesome Saturday morning dance moves in the kitchen. And maybe he'll show some of them to you afterwards. I'm trying to work in as many family illustrations today as possible with my family here. Maybe it's a song. We all have that song that you just cannot sit still to, whether you're driving in the car or you're not supposed to be moving, or you're alone in your house. There are songs that get us moving. And maybe it's a project that you're passionate about, and it just gets you out of bed in the morning. It springs you up. And maybe it's just that deep sense that no matter how tired you are or drained you feel, the show must go on. I can relate to that too. What moves you? We can also ask this question in terms of what moves you internally? What moves you on the inside? What makes your heart beat faster? What makes that feeling like something is just kind of caught in your chest? What brings sudden tears to your eyes? I have a number of friends who are moved by the plight of animals. So if they see an animal in need or just a cute animal, it's almost like they can't handle it. And I know there are some of you here today. I have another friend who's moved by art, by pieces of artwork, and it always surprises her. But she often finds herself moved to tears through a painting of a vase of flowers or a landscape. It touches her. And the other day, I heard a radio announcer say that he finds himself immediately moved to the point of goosebumps when the theme song to Downton Abbey begins. And I know at the mere mention of that, some of you felt that feeling rise in your chest. What moves you? Our passage today is from this tiny book of Zephaniah in the Old Testament, and it is about movement. Do not let your hands hang limp, Zephaniah says in chapter 3, verse 16. The Lord your God is with you. We move and are moved because God is present with us. God's presence animates. Just like artists bring drawings that are still to life in animated films, God's spirit brings all of creation, including us, to life. It's not a static, still life that God calls us to. It's a life of movement, both external movement and internal movement. It's a dance. So step into any part of nature, and you will see this immediately. Even in the most silent, still forests, there is always movement. There are sometimes boulders. You know those boulders when you're hiking around here that just seem to have come out of nowhere because there's no cliff nearby or a mountain? Definitely no mountains here. Those boulders are signs that glaciers once moved with immense power along this landscape. And tall trees that don't even look like they're moving are moving. They're swaying by the wind way up high, or being struck by lightning when we're not watching, or just growing up slowly, quietly, day by day. Squirrels. Squirrels are moving. I don't know if you've ever just watched a squirrel for a while. Not, I don't watch squirrels for a while. I watch squirrels all the time because they're hilarious. It's like they woke up in the morning and ate like chocolate-covered coffee beans every day. They're so frantic and they're moving from here to here, there, but they're just being alive and squirrels and sometimes ruining my garden. In C.S. Lewis' book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the great threat to the world, the evil in that story, is the Ice Queen who freezes everything into winter. When her power takes hold, the rivers stop flowing, the birds stop chirping, and most chilling of all, she turns living beings into stone statues. And I still remember listening to that story being read to me, and then reading it as a child. And I remember how scary that part of the story was, particularly when Lucy walks through a hall of stone statues of beings that used to be alive. Because even as a child and a young person, I knew that what C.S. Lewis was talking about was death, that stillness. To be alive is to move and be moved by the spirit, life, breath. In Hebrew, that's all one word, ruach, of God. And yet, as C.S. Lewis and as Zephaniah reminds us this morning, there is another force at work in this world, a force that freezes and numbs us. As lovely as our passage is today, and it's up there, part of it is up there as well, the book of Zephaniah itself is mostly about God's harsh judgment on Israel and the world because of their sin. Israel and the nations surrounding it, it appears, had been frozen by the Ice Queen. Zephaniah lived and prophesied during the reign of Josiah. And you might remember Josiah from Bible stories about the boy king who finds a scroll forgotten and hid away in the temple. And calls Israel back. It's a scroll with the law of God, and it's been long forgotten, and he calls his people back and begins reforms in Israel to bring them back to God. This is the time when Zephaniah was a prophet, and this book was likely spoken to the people right before that discovery was made, when Israel isn't being reformed by this young child king, but actually is being ruled by the princes and the powers surrounding him and using their influence for their own gain. And so Zephaniah speaks to a people who have been frozen. He speaks to these wealthy princes and leaders. And particularly the ones who are using their wealth for personal gain. And he speaks to them and says, "You guys are complacent, like wine left on its dregs. Those who think the Lord will do nothing, either good or bad." It's one thing to think, "Oh, God doesn't do anything good." It's another thing to think, "God doesn't even do anything bad. God's just nothing." This word picture, wine left in its dregs, is kind of old-fashioned, and it can be a little hard for us to understand. It means wine that has settled comfortably to the bottom of the wine barrel in its aging process. And this word settled in Hebrew also has the meaning of curdled or congealed. So it can be used to describe curdled milk, but it can also be used to describe frozen water. Zephaniah is speaking to privileged people who are frozen and numb to the reality of God, so settled comfortably in the bottom of their barrel that they'd forgotten who they were. They'd forgotten their past and the story that they are part of, this awesome story of God that began in the Garden of Eden. And they'd forgotten about their future, the promises that God made to Abraham and made to them. And now in Zephaniah, God is super angry about this. And sometimes as we read it, it almost seems like he's too angry. God, what is so awful about this state of complacency? Well, the awfulness about this settled complacency is that it isn't neutral. Complacency isn't neutral. And as Zephaniah says in the book, it leads to violence, it leads to deceit, it leads to arrogance. And he tells us that the complacency of these privileged leaders leads to the oppression of those with less power. And Zephaniah uses all of these word pictures to try and get his point across. And one of them is he describes the leaders like evening wolves, which sounds scary, who savagely consume everything around them and leave nothing left over for the morning. They are this destructive, consuming force. Now, I don't know about you, but I get a little uncomfortable sometimes when I read these Old Testament passages, and particularly as I read this one this week, because I know that in this world, I am privileged. I belong to the privileged group. And I also know that sometimes I forget that my God is a God who acts, who actually does something in this world, who moves on this earth. And sometimes when I look out over things in the world and things in my own life, I am totally overwhelmed by it and frozen by it, afraid of it. And it's easier to stay still and not move, not break with the ordinary or routine, and to let the busyness of my life numb me to the things that are just frankly too overwhelming to face. The other day I was running late for something, which is not unusual, and I had a couple minutes to run and get groceries from Food Basics. And so it was already dark outside and it was getting cold and I was in a rush. So I was actually running from the car into the store. And just before I got into the store, I was stopped, slowed in my tracks, because there was a pregnant young woman standing by the door. And she was wearing a hoodie that didn't quite zip up over her pregnant belly. And she was holding a cardboard sign, at which I don't remember what was written on it, except for the big, bold words, pregnant, written. And she was looking right at me. And I froze. And I managed to smile. I managed to look her in the eyes. But then I kept going, and I went into the store. And then my mind started doing that thing, and I'm sure some of you can relate. I thought, well, why is she standing outside of this Food Basics when Kerr Street Mission is just around the corner? Maybe she should be there. Maybe she doesn't know about it. Maybe I'll tell her about it. On my way out, maybe I'll tell her about Kerr Street Mission, where she can get food. But then maybe she can't go there for some reason. Maybe there's a reason she's tried it and she can't get there. And maybe she needs money more than she needs food. And I should ask her that. But what if the money is going to support, I don't know, something else? Maybe then I shouldn't give her money. And you know how your mind goes through all these crazy loops. And it can feel like action. I'm thinking well through this. And on the way out, after I have thought well through how I'm going to respond to this, I will then come and I will respond to this woman. And that was a plan that I made. But it was really stalling. I was frozen in my tracks. I was afraid. And so I vowed on my way out, I would go and I'd talk to her. But of course, she was gone when I got out of the grocery store. Now, regardless of the way that you think I should have responded in that moment, there was an opportunity for me to act. There was an opportunity for me to move, and I froze. And I wish I could say that this was the only time in my life this has ever happened, that I have frozen, and not just in a situation like this, but in any situation, or have frozen when I should have moved. There are many things that freeze us still. And fear, I think, is one of the iciest forces. To move and to be moved means to change and to be changed. And that is scary. But God speaks into our fear. And he speaks right into this thought through the words of Zephaniah. Do not fear, he says. It's repeated twice in our verses today. Do not fear. The same thing he said to Mary, same thing he said to Joseph, the same thing he said to Zechariah. So many characters that he called into his story. He begins with do not fear because he knows that's our go-to. And he knows that that freezes us. Do not fear. Do not let your hands hang limp. Don't be still. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you. He's not going to remind you over and over again. Remember that time you froze and you didn't do the thing? But he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's beautiful. It's a beautiful passage. But you know what? It's even more beautiful in Hebrew. And this is where sometimes translating poetry from an ancient language into our language kind of lets us down. Because the words associated with taking great delight and rejoicing are words that are also associated with movement. And so if you look them up in a concordance, you'll find that the words are associated with displaying joy in a visible way, with leaping, and my favorite, springing. Oh no, this is my favorite. Shouting and going around in a circle. In other words, dancing. These are words associated with dancing. Displaying great joy. In Hebrew culture, dancing was a part of worship. They didn't just stand still and shout their praise. They danced. We might think of Miriam on the shores of the Red Sea dancing with her tambourine, or King David dancing so crazily that he was making, well, that he was embarrassing his cool young wife, Michal. Can you picture God dancing around you with all his heart and all his crazy, probably really good dance moves? He is a God who is moved. And Zephaniah reminds us that he is a God who moves around us. He is a God who is moved by the plight of the oppressed and by the complacency of the privileged. He is a God who moves with swift action to bring about justice and restoration on earth. And he is a God who moves with the best dance moves, apparently, and the craziest joy and the most exuberant love around us, his beloved people. See if that thought doesn't make you laugh next time you're sitting on the train on your morning commute or sitting in class waiting for the teacher to start, and you imagine God dancing around you with crazy dance moves just because he loves you. And they're probably better than this because it's God, but maybe they're not. Maybe he's doing the grocery cart around you just because he's like, look, it's you, I made you, and I love you, I delight in you. And sometimes, when I lie down at night and I'm tired and I'm feeling like I don't have what it takes to do the things that I know I have to do tomorrow, or I'm feeling like a lousy friend or a lousy family member, I picture God quieting me. Another way that you can translate the end of the verse, the part that says he will no longer rebuke you, but he will sing over you, is another way is to say he will quiet you with his love. And I picture God quieting me by singing over me about his love for me, enabling me to fall asleep so that the next day I can get up and move, because he is moving. He has already moved. The greatest move of God that we celebrate at this time of year is when God moved towards us in Jesus Christ, in the birth of Jesus Christ. The Apostle John puts it like this: the Word became flesh and pitched his tent among us. I know you're not all campers around here, so I'll translate that in another way. The Word became flesh and moved into our neighborhood. That's John 1, verse 14. Throughout Jesus' ministry, we find him moving. He's a God who moves, and we find him moved internally by the people around him. Sometimes it's with rage as he looks at the injustice, but often it is with compassion and sorrow at their suffering. And in the end, it does him in. In the end, he dies. Nowhere in the Gospels does Jesus deny that movement isn't risky. But then, oh happy day, then he moves again. And this time it's up and out of the grave. And he goes to his shocked and terrified disciples and he breathes on them. It's so wonderful and weird. He breathes on them, the spirit, the life, the ruach of God, so that they too can move and go out into all the world, move like he moves, be moved like he is moved. And later, the Apostle Paul would say, "For in him we live and move and have our being," as he stood amongst these frozen Greek statues in Athens. "God himself gives everyone life and breath," he said in that same speech. And that's in Acts 17, verse 25 and 28. We can move and be moved because God is present with us, and God moves and is moved. And his spirit is the breath that is in our bodies that brings us to life, that lifts our chest as we take a breath in and brings oxygen to our arms and our legs and our hearts and our guts. I wish, going back to that grocery store incident, that I had acted with more movement. But as I've reflected on it, I'm struck by the fact that something in me, even though I was so focused, and I'm not good with like quick decisions on the fly, something slowed me and stopped me. Something allowed me to make eye contact and smile. And it's not my own awesomeness, as much as I would like to think that. It's not. It's because the Spirit of God, as wild as it sounds, was moving around that woman, was dancing in delight over her, saying, "Look who I made." And the Spirit of God, who is doing that same thing around and in me, caught that in that moment, slowed me in that moment, and invited me to get into the dance that was already happening. And yeah, fear stopped me. But the truth is, fear has no power over me. There is a mighty warrior at my side. And next time God calls, I'm going to get on that dance floor because it's good. It's good to be in the dance that God calls us into. So what moves you, King's Community Church? How is God calling you to move in this world as a church? How is his spirit animating you, bringing you to life? God is calling me to move, and some of you have been probably waiting for me to make that move connection, so there it is. But I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on your movement as a church, because God is now calling you to move, King's Community Church. And he is moving in and amongst you. And when I say that, I am not just talking to the adults in this room. I am also talking to you grade 6 and 7s and 8s and 9s and 10s and 11s and 12s. And so I'm going to start with you guys, who are mostly up in the balcony if you see me looking up. I see a few of you there too. How is God moving amongst you guys? It's been quite a year, hasn't it? This time last year, we said goodbye to Chris. And that was rough. That was hard. And now, we have to say goodbye. And that also is hard. You guys have had a year without a youth pastor. And you've had from September until now without even a youth intern. But we have still had a youth group. And we have still had a youth group. We still have a youth group because of a number of reasons. One of them is because a number of our high school students committed to being leaders this year. And for those of you that think that I run Wednesday nights, I am not fun enough to run Wednesday nights. I'm just not fun enough for it. Thank the Lord for these high school students. For the past 6 weeks, they have planned and implemented right down to the materials that we need every Wednesday night. And so Samantha, Eli, Luke, Leah, and Gabby have been the ones helping to run and maintain our youth group without a youth pastor and without youth interns. My role is to support and encourage them and make a lot of dollar store runs for the materials that we need. We keep that place in business. We still have a youth group because you grade 6s, 7s, and 8s still keep coming. And you keep saying, this is where we want to be. And you keep bringing your friends to it as well. And your parents keep driving you, which we thank you for as well. Over the next 6 months, you guys probably won't have a youth pastor like we have had in the past. But I am so certain that you guys will still have a youth group. Because God is moving amongst you, and I have seen that this year. And because this is part of your journey, this is part of what God is calling you guys to. And it actually really excites me, because you guys are learning something that has the potential to actually change church and actually transform the way that we do church and engage in church. Because you guys are learning about what it means to truly be part of the church without having a youth pastor there to provide the games and the fun. You guys are learning what it means to come and actually help build community as a group of Christians. And that sets an example for us adults as well. And so I will be praying for you guys as you go into this next season. And I do hope that a youth pastor comes alongside soon. But in the meantime, God is moving in you, and you can be part of that. Not later when you're like 25 or 30, but now you guys are part of building this church. And that is an incredible thing. God invites you into that. That's how I see the Spirit of God moving you guys and moving in you and amongst you. And now for the rest of you, I see God moving in you too. I see God moving in the way that you invite the next generation into the life of our church, things like worship this morning. I see God moving in the way that you have continued to walk alongside the Al-Hamad family, even though our official sponsorship is long over. But you know the call, and you have been living the call to be good neighbors. I see God moving in the initiative by our board members to gather and pray before the service. And that might seem like a small thing, but that is a huge thing. I have never seen God not use a gathering of prayer and do something incredible with it. So I am excited about that initiative and to see that bubbling up. God is moving and he is at work. I see God moving in the way that you participated in our dessert fundraiser and our auction a few weeks ago. There was joy and generosity. There was participation. You could feel it in the room. There was something happening, something moving. That was God. And while all identifying information is always confidential, I see God moving in the percentage of households that have drawn on our church's counseling services through Shalem, meaning that you guys are willing to do the hard work of attending to your mental and relational health. And again, that seems like a small thing. That is a big thing. And not only that, but it shows us
that also the stigma around mental health is declining in our community as we continue to pursue that. That is a way that God is moving. Kings, God is with you. And as I head out, and therefore you head into a time of transition, I believe a beautiful invitation is also happening. It's an invitation to change, and that's hard, but it's also good, because change is movement, and movement spurred by the Spirit of God is life. It means you're alive. Your church is alive. Our church is alive. Life with God is a wild dance. It is a wild dance. It is not for the faint of heart. But we are not dancing alone. We're not dancing alone. And so I'm going to invite the worship team up. But before I end, I want to read these verses over you. And I want to read them. I've paraphrased a little bit to make it into a blessing and also a benediction. Sing, King's Community Church. Shout aloud, people of God. Be glad and dance with all of your heart, friends. The Lord has taken away your punishment. He has turned back your enemy. The Lord, the King of Kings, is with you. Never again will you fear any harm. Today, I say to you, kings, do not fear, friends. Do not fear. Do not let your hands hang at your sides or your hearts be overwhelmed to a standstill. The Lord, your God, Jesus Christ, has moved into your neighborhood, this neighborhood, and he is a mighty warrior who saves. He takes great delight in you. And in his love, he does not condemn you, but he rejoices over you with singing and dancing. Amen.